Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you.
Hold on a second, Sean. I want to steal third. Okay, I failed. Go ahead. I'll continue with the show.
Thanks for running us out of the inning. Appreciate that.
You started off a little slow out of the gate, so I was like, I think I've got time to steal third here.
Just because you pinch ran for me in that moment right now doesn't mean you're fast, okay?
I'll
Seth
tell you
Stubbs.
Thing. There's a chance that I might right this moment be faster than Maldonado. That doesn't mean that I'm going to try to steal third in a Major League Baseball game.
We have so much to get into today. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 o'clock today. Payne and Pendergast, Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. We've got college football semi-shutting down. We've got Texans training camp, which is going to be they're going to be starting up practices hardcore on Friday this week. They're all in the building.
Hardcore plastic-on-plastic action.
You got it, right?
They're actually wearing pads on
the
Friday.
The first football players to actually hit each other in the United States since the coronavirus pandemic.
The first time that men will be forcefully exhaling into each other's mouths on an NFL practice
field. NFL practice field, yeah.
We're not getting into whatever.
Yeah, not that there's anything wrong with that. Yeah.
No.
So the Astros, meanwhile, just continue to be a tragedy to root for these days. If you stayed up last night, God bless you. I did. Stayed all the way up because I wanted to watch them win two in a row for the first time in a long time.
Stupid move by you.
It was really,
you feel
really
stupid?
Dumb.
You should.
Not as stupid as the base running errors, but that is the time. That's the Astros base running of time management. Staying up to watch an Astros game.
I feel like that's where Houston should. You should be genuinely angry at them. Not just for their youthful indiscretions, but also because they're robbing sleep from you.
Yes!
These late starts or relatively late starts, they're robbing sleep from you for this nonsense, this inanity.
Yeah!
This Presley.
I'm not even complaining about the fact that they're losing. It's how they're losing. Like that they can't hold a lead. They're 7-10 now, and they have, by my count, Seth, four games that are of the you know, just gut punch variety. You know, the ones...
All these extra innings games.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
But they've had leads in all of them, is my point.
Yeah.
They've had four games
yeah.
where they've taken leads in the eighth or ninth inning, and they've just proceeded to go back out and spit the bit. And Dusty Baker talking... And you're just getting up. The Astros lose last night in extra innings again to the San Francisco Giants. A game that they led late. They gave up the lead. They went into extra innings tied at six. And, you know, just Ryan Presley just coughed up the lead in the ninth inning again. Here's Dusty Baker on how tough these losses are to take.
They say one of the biggest downers in sports or in baseball is a blown save. And, you know, and then the opposition, it gives them energy that, you know, if you get into the game late or get in the other team's bullpen, I've been on the other side, then you're like, hey, let's get in the bullpen and we got a chance to win. So we certainly, you know, we got to correct that. And boy, this is tough.
Oh, you get into the bullpen with the Astros and it's like a fox in the hen house, isn't it? there's just all these young plump hens that you want to pluck off, and that's the unfortunate situation.
Yeah.
Some of the guys, some of these guys that were just these fresh debutantes that nothing could go wrong for and had a little bit of beginner's luck going, we're starting to see the youth, as we expected.
They've been deflowered and sullied, yes. Some of these young. Yeah, Blake Taylor.
It's like that. Boy, yeah, that reminds me. I had a friend in college, Brian. He had a girlfriend, Janet, who was just one of the most gorgeous young things you'd ever seen in your life. And then I ran into her 10 years later after she'd been a bartender in various places in Mexico.
And?
Oh, my goodness. Remember okay. Something about Mary, the old lady, and Something About Mary?
Right.
She was a 10 compared to Janet.
Really?
That was, no, I'm being mean now. No, but she'd been weathered a little bit, and that's where I feel like these young bullpen arms have been weathered a little bit.
Yeah, Blake Taylor got his comeuppance last night, a third of an inning, and he gave up a home run to Hunter Pence. It was fun to see Hunter Pence coming back into the building. Hitting a home run. Seth, that audio from Dusty is interesting to me because that's something I've often said, just sort of as an observation. That's something I've often said is how I feel when a loss is like that, where you give up a lead late in the game. And the Astros have had more than their fair share through the first 17 games of the season. They've had four of these now. I've always thought like that almost feels like it counts as two or three losses, just because if I were a player, man, that'd be tough to wake up and come to the ballpark the next day knowing that we should have won this game, especially in a 60-game season where these things are worth 2.7 times more than they are in a normal season. What Dusty is saying right there is that phenomenon, at least in the moment in a press conference after the game, is true. You can hear it in his voice. He can hear it in his words. He's saying, man, these types of losses are harder than other types of losses. And the Astros have had four of them now out of their 10 losses this year. They're teetering on the brink of not making an expanded playoff if the season were to end today. It's crazy.
They're in third place by a half game. This is what we've been reduced to here in Houston. And we're looking at this race in the AL West, where every single team that isn't the A's has 7 wins right this moment. The Astros are in this pathetic race for second with the Texas Rangers of all teams.
That's where they
need to dig themselves out of this. And this would be the Mariners. Yeah, they have the same number of wins as the Mariners.
As the Mariners, yeah.
But now let's dial this back a little bit though, and try to have some perspective.
Talk
on
me
it.
Off the ledge, Seth.
I can't get overly disgusted. Now look, Presley. Okay, Presley's a vet, and you can get upset with Presley. I have a really, really hard time getting overly upset with Blake Taylor. Even Garrett Stubbs, I could see myself doing what Garrett Stubbs did.
It doesn't make
you
right.
If I'm a young man trying to prove myself.
Seth, that was idiocy. Are you kidding me? These guys ran themselves out of 3 innings. They got the Reddick gets the out at third. He gets a 2-run double, which is nice. We don't see many of those from Josh Reddick. And then he gets the third out running to third base in the second inning. Altuve, of all people, gets picked off in the sixth inning. And then Stubbs, you refer to. I don't know what the hell Stubbs is thinking. Dude, just because you get put into pinch run at second base from Maldonado does not mean that they think you're fast. It means they think you're faster than Maldonado. Here's Dusty Baker. If you missed it, Garrett Stubbs got caught stealing in the eighth inning for the third out of the inning, which it was mind-blowing to see. What the hell are you doing, Garrett Stubbs?
I mean, we had action on Pat in the lead, in the eighth, and, you know, with Altuve up, running around first and second, the guy just walked two guys. I talked to Stubbs after the game and asked him, where is he going? And he said, you know, the guy was slow to the plate and he thought he could steal third. And I said, well, you know, that's a base running mistake because he already was in scoring position. And, that was potential. You know, ran ourselves out of that inning.
Seth, I will back you up on this in terms of Garrett Stubbs and the YOLO Garrett Stubbs last night trying to steal third base. This is not a Garrett Stubbs problem as much as it is. This is an Astros problem, and this is not even a Dusty Baker problem. This is the one area when they were the best team in baseball for the last 3 years. Over that period of time, you know, they average 103 wins a season or something. The one blind spot they had as a team was base running. They have been a horrible, horrible, horrible base running team for years now. I don't know what it is. These guys get on the base paths and their IQs drop by 50 points. It's incredible.
I've talked to various people about that too, and they, you know, guys, baseball guys, and it seems to be the most common answer they just say is that it's just a flat out matter of emphasis, you know, and AJ Hinch didn't emphasize it. They were very, now, at least part of it with the A.J. Hinch Astros and the Jeff Luhnow Astros was that they were going to be aggressive on the base paths. So it was sometimes it was easier to let it go because their strategy was just that it pays off more times than it doesn't by being aggressive on the base paths. They would still make dumb errors at times. But there was this overall mentality of we're going to be aggressive. With Garrett Stubbs, look, you're not part of that overall philosophy in that moment. That's not, you don't have the authority. You don't have the experience. You don't have the right to steal when it's a surprise to Gary Pettis, of all people. Yeah. Whenever, my goodness, if we watch this team long enough to know that if Gary Pettis isn't for you running, that, man, you're way out. That's that alone right there. Is it? Anytime Gary Pettis is surprised that you're doing anything, you are wrong.
You were too aggressive.
You are way wrong. You're way overly aggressive.
Dusty needs to add something to his checklist now when he sends guys into pinch run. He needs to now be detailed about exactly what he thinks about them just as an athlete. Like, look, I'm putting you into pinch run. This doesn't mean I think you're really fast. It just means I think you're faster than this really slow guy, and you happen to play the same position as him as well. I'm putting my less slow catcher into pinch run for my very slow catcher.
Look, I know with Dusty, the talk is always about does he leave pitchers in too long. I'm going to tell you, I was not a big fan of Springer going into pinch run. When Springer's like just teetering on the edge of the IL and you're hoping he can make it back with a sprained wrist.
Right.
I don't know. There's a time to be conservative with a guy, and I feel like just any chance of an injury on a base running, collision or slide or anything.
Especially with a wrist injury. Springer's the type of guy who would slide head first into a base with a wrist injury.
Completely and totally.
Yes.
He might, by instinct, he might go after a fly ball that the opposing team might hit.
That's how aggressive he is.
Yeah.
The mistakes actually started early yesterday, as I'm reminded on the text page. I don't know what's worse, being told yesterday by Sean the game started at 6:10 Central Time, or 7:10 Eastern Time. This must be Chris in Atlanta. 7:10 my time, and it was in fact a 9:10 start, or falling asleep when they had a 6-2 lead and waking up to realize they blew the game. Thanks, Sean and Dusty. I did. I screwed up. I had several people. I was kind of encouraged by it, by how many people came after me about it, because that means there's a lot of people listening.
Yeah.
But I did feel a little overwhelmed by how many people I had told yesterday. I said on the show yesterday the game starts at 6:10 p.m.
You know what? Yeah,
it was 8:10.
You're like, now you know what you are. You're like Superman when you now realize all of a sudden the enormity of the responsibility. Where you can look, Superman can't sleep in, Sean.
No.
Superman has to be there for everybody all the time.
It made me want to make the Earth spin backwards so I could go back and redo that mistake.
It makes me feel a whole lot better about saying Chris Paul when I meant Kyrie Irving.
It should. And that was way less.
That didn't hurt anybody.
No, that was way less inconveniencing for other people.
That hurt nobody except myself because I'm probably now on a Kyrie Irving conspiracy watch list.
No doubt.
Yeah.
All right. The Big Ten canceled their fall football season, as did the Pac-12. Which of those two conferences is more pathetic? And are we surprised at the Big 12's decision in this? That's next. It was an historic day yesterday, not in a good way, in collegiate sports. The Big Ten, one of the blue bloods of college football when it comes to conferences.
Never heard of them.
They're the Ivy League of the Power Five.
Northwestern set. In that conference?
They are, yeah. They're the Ivy League of the Power Five.
Okay,
yeah.
I might could have heard them at some point.
Well,
some...
they canceled their fall.
They play football at Michigan, do they?
Not this year, they're not.
In a normal year?
Yeah, in a normal year they would. Yesterday, the Big Ten, I think maybe there was some holding out of hope that the Big Ten, I know there was with me, that the Big Ten would put this decision off, would maybe move their start date of the season, which was the earliest of the start dates of the Power Five when they put their schedule out 5 days ago. They literally put a schedule out for the season on August 5th, so a week ago, I guess. And then they canceled the season 6 days later. That's just how haphazard the decision-making is with all of this. But just to get you up to speed on this, in case you were spending your evening last night getting your night ruined by the Astros, what happened in college football yesterday was monumental. The Big Ten opted to cancel all of its fall sports. They're going to try to play football in the spring, which we can talk about that. The Pac-12, just hours later, made the same decision. And to me, of these two conferences, look, I would have liked to have seen both of them delay their decision. I'm of the mindset right now that there should be college football played at the Power Five level because they have the resources to do the testing and so forth. Or at least let's examine this for another month until we get more information on the heart conditions from COVID and COVID itself. But to me, Seth, I'm really disappointed that those two conferences did that. I was thrilled that the Big 12 is at least going to hang in for a little while longer to see this. The SEC and ACC does not surprise me at all. They seem steadfast on playing. Of all these conferences, the Pac-12 is the one for me where I'm like, God, what a bunch of wusses. Like, it's one thing for you to disagree with the Big Ten. You can agree or disagree. They made their decision. They say it's in the interest of safety for the kids. That the Pac-12 has to sit here and wait for the Big Ten to see what they do is, to me, like, it's just one of the most pathetic things.
It's like the kid that needs somebody to escort him to the bathroom.
Yes.
You know, because he's bashful or shy.
I asked Larry Scott on Twitter, the commissioner, I said, does the Big Ten have to escort you to the bathroom when you need to go?
Did you really?
I did. Well, he's not on Twitter, but if he searches his name, he'll find it.
Yeah. I genuinely didn't see that. I'm pleased that we both had the same analogy.
Yes.
I must have seen that at some point yesterday. I didn't just...
Seeped into your brain,
I didn't just pull that out of my butt after you escorted me to the bathroom.
What did you think of the decision yesterday by these guys?
I guess I'm not as disgruntled by it as you are. I think it's a really hard decision by administrators, and I think they also have to take into account, all right, what's the climate in their particular states, you know, and what's the climate? I almost called it the electorate, but it is kind of like that, isn't it?
It got political. The president weighed in.
Geography and politics matter more than they should in all of this, I think. So I get it. I've been trying to put myself in the position of an administrator or an athletic director, anybody, when you have various parents coming to you and saying, hey, my son's got myocarditis, inflammation of the heart because of this. And I understand where they're coming from. It's really, really hard right this moment because the data is so all over the place, and the downside is so extreme if you look at worst case scenario that I think it's really, really hard to make a decision. But I do side on the part of if I look at what's the better alternative, all right, for all these young athletes to actually be in a bubble where they're getting tested several times a week, where the positive test rates are extremely, extremely low right now, I think that a lot of the individual players might be better off being in the bubble, not just from a COVID standpoint, but from a mental health standpoint, from a structure and regiment standpoint, from an academic standpoint, all of those things, I think they might be in a better situation. But then also, I think the greater question has always been, and we keep losing sight of this, what do the things that we are doing as individuals, how do they affect society at large? Are we worsening the spread of coronavirus or are we not? And I think so far from what I've seen in these various semi-bubbles is that they're not worsening the spread. If anything, they might be actually helping tamp it down by keeping at least one portion of young Americans much more careful about with whom they associate, because they got to try to be careful if they want to play sports. So for all those reasons, there's risk right now in a lot of areas, but as long as there's an opt-out where there's no stigma attached to it, and J.J. Watt actually did a really good job in talking to Peter King about this. And say, look, as long as there's no stigma attached to opting out, as long as you don't have administrators or coaches shaming guys and young women who opt out, then I think that they should be allowed to go out and play the sport that they want to play.
Yeah.
And as long as you've got, like, all these extreme, these Texas high school coaches are really taking a lot of extreme measures at their camps from the reports I'm getting from various people. And it's way more than a lot of people. Look, man, I'm out and about. I see what people are doing in life.
Yeah.
And I see the various levels of adherence to the guidelines. And I'll tell you flat out, the athletic programs are way, way, way more disciplined about this than probably the vast majority of Americans right now.
Yep, I think it's a great point. Now, Seth, what this sets up, you know, as disappointed as I am that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 made their decision, I'm disappointed more that they made their decision right now than that this was their decision, because I think they just have more time. I think, to me, and I know it feels like they've kept kicking the can down the road. The frustration is they've kicked the can down the road without creating any sort of contingencies, without making any sort of planning or exploring testing and things like that. I feel like the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 are going to use this time to do some productive things. I think what this sets up, just functionally in college football, Seth, we're already seeing a mutiny with some of the coaches in the Big 10 wanting to play. Scott Frost, Ryan Day, Jim Harbaugh. Do these schools somehow go cobble a schedule together? How does that work? You know, we're hearing like Nebraska wants to play a schedule. The Ohio State wants to look into going to the SEC. How the hell does that? How the hell do you join a conference for a year? I mean, I know Notre Dame's doing it with the ACC, but they were an independent in football who already had a relationship with the ACC and the recruiting now, Seth. If the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 wind up starting and playing a season, the Big 10 and Pac 12 will have crippled themselves in recruiting. This will be a suicidal recruiting move if the other three Power Fives all play.
Right.
And do you want to go to a conference that didn't even want to play football last year?
Well, imagine, think about, again, Pandora's box in terms of all the ramifications for everybody, I think, in all these conferences, but especially in those conferences that aren't playing. When you have the other players that are, when you have the players who aren't playing have now been given an extra year of eligibility, then incoming freshmen are going to have that much more competition, Sean.
Yeah.
So, okay,
yeah.
do I want to go to a school where there are 25% more guys I'm in competition with, or do I want to take my wares to the Big 12? I'm going to the Big 12.
Yeah. No doubt.
And also, I'm with you too. I did see you say this on Twitter that it sure does feel like spring football is a pipe dream at this point. I usually don't like calling out the hypocrisy of the amateurism of college football. It is what it is, and it's been that way for a long time. But when you start saying, "Hey, we're going to have these young men play two seasons in the course of what, 6, 7, 8 months?
Right.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. That's absurd. That's just, if you're doing all this to protect the safety of these young men and women, then how the hell are you justifying having them play two seasons in less than a calendar
year? I'm glad you're the former player, so I think your opinion on that matters more because you've been through seasons of football before, so I'm glad you're saying that because it just seems common sense would seem to dictate that's the case. Real quick text message, and we'll jump out here. It's from PaveText. I want to read it because I know PaveText likes to troll a little bit, but it's.
I think he's pretty serious about this stuff.
I think he is. I think he is too, and I think he echoes the sentiment of a lot of people that I saw opining on this yesterday. I wish people would be more concerned about these kids not getting paid, but people are so selfish they just want their sports. What I would say to that is, you know who else was so selfish they just wanted their sports? A lot of these players, PaveText. There was a hashtag, we want to play, going around. I mean, thousands and thousands of players making no bones about the monetary part of this, just saying they want to play football. So I think it needs to be taken into account. Like, nobody was forcing any of these kids, and nobody is anymore. I mean, right now, like, if these kids at Alabama or UT don't want to play, they can opt out, and I would imagine keep their scholarships.
Yeah.
All right. We had three really crucial Texans meet with the media yesterday. All three had injury issues last year. All three need to stay healthy if this team's going to accomplish what they want to this year. Will Fuller was the big one. As it turns out, the culprit for his injuries might be something we should all work on. We'll tell you what it is next. We got a heaping helping yesterday of Texan players meeting with the media. All three, Seth, are guys who missed significant time last year. Will Fuller in and out of the lineup with his various lower extremity injuries. Titus Howard, about halfway through the season, his rookie year, knee injury. And then Bradley Roby, who was one of the most durable cornerbacks in football. He missed one game his first five seasons. That was because of a suspension. So he had never missed a game because of injury since he got into the NFL. He had a bad hamstring last year for about half the season. So all three guys met with the media yesterday. All three guys, to me, Seth, are among the 10 or 12 most important players on this football team.
Right. Well, and if only, you know, regardless of how well they play, just because they're better than their backups. You know, that's the golden rule in the NFL, is that everybody's usually, on average, yeah, your starters are way better than your backups. So the teams that stay healthier have a much better chance in the postseason. And you get to that, you get to that final game versus Kansas City, and you look at the state of the secondary, look at the fact that Fuller was banged up, you look at the fact that DeAndre Hopkins was playing with 3 out of 4 messed up limbs, and it affected it. I'm not saying that the Texans could have won that game. I mean, they could have. Obviously, they beat the Chiefs earlier in the season. It should have been a hell of a lot closer if they'd been healthier.
Yeah. Well, when I look at last year and they go, well, if they had this guy, what could have happened in the postseason? It's not about the Chiefs game. I mean, it is. You got to beat the Chiefs in order to get to the Super Bowl. To me, the Texans were in a position last year, if they win a couple of winnable games during the season, they're getting a bye in the first round of the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, that's where the Super Bowl and Super Bowl runs are oftentimes won in week five or week seven. You can't lose to Carolina at home in week four. You know what I mean? You can't follow up the biggest win of the year of the Patriots by getting run off the field by a Broncos team that hasn't sniffed the playoffs in 3 or 4 years. That can't happen. Keeping these guys healthy is a real key. Now, Fuller is the big one because we know, Seth, that we know what the numbers look like. And granted, these are numbers that include DeAndre Hopkins being part of this team. I still think that with Cooks and Cobb, they don't directly replace Hopkins, but they do create a different dynamic where I think this is going to be a good offense, mostly because of number four. But Fuller's a guy who needs to be on the field. I don't care who the other guys are out there. Fuller changes the calculus for everything. Okay, I want to play these cuts, Seth. You're a former player. You've probably had personal trainers and things like that in your time. And Fuller brought up one of the strangest things I've ever heard in a press conference as to the reason why he may be experiencing all of these soft tissue injuries in his legs, the quads, the hamstrings, the groins, and things like that. It's something that he's been working on this offseason with Ben Fairchild, of all people, the same person that J.J. Watt was lauding in his press conference last week. Here is Will Fuller on what he did this offseason to address health.
I met a guy that I was working out with, just focusing on like a lot of mechanical things, try to fix the way I'm running. Just fix my posture, you know, just little things that can go a long way if you stay on it throughout the season.
That was one time. Then Will Fuller, very next question. He talks about Ben Fairchild is the name of the person he works out with. Here's Will Fuller. I'm working out with Ben Fairchild.
It was very important. Like I just said, he really broke it down to the simplest things that I really overlooked. So like I just said, little things like my posture, the little things that were off, like my posture, that can go a long way just fixing things like that. So you know, like I said, I'm feeling real good this season, and I'm ready to, you know, get out there and start playing.
Yeah, it's funny, Sean, that you thought it was so weird that he said posture, and I understand it because guys don't usually use that. They don't usually talk specifically about the posture or things like that. But that kind of training, like the Ben Fairchild does, it's. You run into it a lot, and you see it with a lot of different NFL teams when it comes to how you hold your body, because the way you hold your posture and the form you use when you run ends up stressing different muscles and putting more stress on, like, say, your hamstring or your lower back or your erectus or your all kinds of muscles that I can't remember the name of. It's funny, as a lineman, you start to learn a lot more about stuff that sprinters are working on in high school and college in terms of running form, and then actually just how you move. And when you're walking upstairs, are you actually using your glutes? You know, how are you holding your body when you do various things? Are you engaging your core? So it's good stuff, but it's like anything else. It's like a golfer changing his swing. You got to drill it and drill it and drill it and drill it and be cognizant of it all the time, because if you're not, then all of a sudden you just go back to your bad habits. So that's the big challenge is when you go back to the football field and you've got a whole lot of other things to worry about other than just working on your posture. How does it persist, and do you keep up with it?
Yeah, well, Fuller mentioned it. He mentioned it at least one more time in the press conference. And Ben Fairchild, as I mentioned, is the guy who he's been working with on this. If you remember, just to go back in the Wayback Machine of a week ago Saturday when J.J. Watt met with the media, here was J.J. Watt on Ben Fairchild.
Ben's been incredible. Ben's done a great job. He's been part of the transformation that fully – you know, we sat down in January and we talked about the goals for the offseason. And the goal was to completely rebuild my body from the ground up, to break it all the way down, to learn what we need to do, what we need to change, how we need to change the training program. And we rebuilt it from the very simplest steps in the foundation all the way up to where we are today. And he's done an incredible job, and I'm fortunate to have him as a good trainer. And so the staff here has done a good job, too. Mike Eubanks has done a great job implementing things from here forward, so I'm really looking forward to this season.
Yeah, that's like six straight times I've stepped on his compliments about the actual Texans training staff when we've played that cut. Seth, I found it. I've been looking for the random person who is going to get way too much attention that's not a player for the Texans this training camp. There's been one every year for the last 3 years now. If you remember 2 years ago, it was Luke Richeson. Remember, they brought in Luke Richeson from Denver to change
Sports
the cafeteria
science,
and change the gym and change the training regimen. And this guy was going to put the Texans on his his calisthenically aligned back and take them to a Super Bowl. And then he's gone after a year. Last year, you know who it was? The man who has, along with O'Brien, seized control of things over there, Jack Easterby. Easterby was the talk of the town last year, how he was bebopping and scotting around practice and talking everybody up with a big smile and a, hey, buddy, how you doing? And now it's Ben Fairchild. That, I know he's not a Texans employee.
Yeah,
but he's the random non-player who's getting who's going to get more attention than maybe he deserves this year.
This is okay. This is what I so far like about Ben Fairchild, whose name I had never heard before. JJ brought it up the other week. I think I actually have heard from him before. I think he's worked with a few guys. But this is the thing. Like, as I told you, this kind of verbiage and everything is pretty common. The longer you spend in the NFL, the more time you spend going around and learning from various people, or you have coaches come in and do it. And a lot of them are using the same system, like the functional movement system with diagnoses, imbalances, and everything. So it's all really good stuff. But this is the thing. So you meet thousands and thousands of these gurus, and you start to get a little wary of them, and you start to, you know, sniff out the ones who are self-promoters. I absolutely love the fact that I've never heard from Ben Fairchild himself.
Yeah.
I like the guy that's just going about doing his business instead of, you know, pimping his website every chance he gets. Or the worst ever is, this is what you get sick of. You get sick of the guys that swear up and down, like, huh, you'll never get injured again after you work with me. Because you show me that, that's a clown that's never worked with anybody before.
Yeah.
Because in football, sometimes it's the equivalent of just, okay, hey, my body's completely and totally aligned, but if somebody comes up and hits me in the knee with a sledgehammer, I'm going to done get injured.
Yeah.
So, like, I think that guys, I like guys who aren't self-promoters. And this guy doesn't strike me as a self-promoter because I've only heard his name from other athletes.
No, he's got a very clean website. I like the design of his website. If the design of his website is anything like his teaching methodology, I am with J.J. Watt and Will Fuller on this thing. Seth, I'm going to hit...
I would feel bad if Ben Fairchild was listening and he was like, in that moment, was thinking about like tweeting something out.
Tweeting
and now
something.
He's like, oh, crap.
Or creating a YouTube channel or something.
Yeah, like any...
I'm on...
Hey, Ben. Hey, look, Ben, life is short. You got to go make your money, man. Don't listen to me.
Yeah.
I'm just a clown on the radio. go do your thing.
All right, so Seth, would you be concerned if he had a YouTube channel? Because I'm on YouTube right now. I just put Ben Fairchild...
No.
Ben Fairchild in the search box, and I'm waiting to hit enter to see what your take is on
it. No. I would not be upset. That's life. That's life today, right? You got to get your name out there and everything. There's just
Fairchild
certain...
Sports Performance YouTube channel.
Yeah,
boom.
No, of course. Yeah. I mean, he's not. He is running a business.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to be a moron about it. But as far as...
I would be more worried if he didn't have a YouTube channel, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. The same thing goes for sports psychologists. You know, you do have to advertise yourself and promote yourself to a certain degree. But sometimes there's really good sports psychologists, and then there's some that...
There's quacks.
Like, you get into talking to them for about 5 minutes, and you're like, okay, could you shut up about yourself for a moment?
Right.
Like, stop telling me all your success stories. I'd like to just actually get to work here. And some trainers are kind of like that, too. You're like, all right, hey, look, we've been here for a half hour, and you've been telling me your success stories this whole time. Let's get to work.
The two players, I think, who it's easiest, other than Deshaun Watson, the two players who it's easiest to trace a disparity in performance of their respective sides of the ball to them being on the field or off the field might be Will Fuller and J.J. Watt. Like when J.J. Watt went out last year, all of a sudden they can't rush the passer to save their lives. Will Fuller goes out, and the offense is, relatively speaking, in mud. If these two guys are able to stay on the field for a full season, I'm sending Ben Fairchild a damn fruit basket next year in January, man.
This is a big year for Ben Fairchild.
It's a huge year for Fairchild.
He's been mentioned by... But he's in a win-win situation because he's been mentioned by the two most injury-prone yet most electric players on the field, wouldn't you say? Like, J.J. Watt is the most electric player on defense right now. Will Fuller... Well, okay, aside from Deshaun Watson, but when Will Fuller is healthy, he's the most electric player on offense. So if those guys both play a total of 32 games, it's going to be a good Christmas for Ben Fairchild.
I have my first fantasy draft coming
or
up
Hanukkah
next week
or whatever. I don't want to sure. discourage him from self-promoting and convert him to either Judaism or Christianity.
Right. No, I get it. I'm going to be the smartest guy in the room at my fantasy draft next week with my first round pick. Guess who? Ben Fairchild. That's who I'm taking. I'm going to keep everybody healthy on my fantasy team. So the other two players that met with the media yesterday, also banged up last year, but critically important to the fortunes of the Texans. And this, Seth, I think this one fits the description you're talking about, where Titus Howard, good football player, you know, and has a chance to be a really good football player as he gets older. But with Titus Howard, it's as much about, oh, crap, who's going to play right tackle if Titus Howard is out, as it is about him being a good football player. Titus Howard, of course, knee injury last year. Injuries were not an issue for him coming into the league, but he had a knee injury last year. He came back from it for a game or two and then just had to shut it down. Played half the season. Good enough to be on the all-rookie team for the 8 or 9 games that he played. Here is how he spent his offseason, and he mentions his health.
I was mostly in the building 5 days a week, rehabbing, getting ready for the season. I got married in the offseason and back in February, so I spent a lot of time with my wife. She's pregnant now, having a baby in October. So that's how I spent my offseason. I spent it, you know, trying to get, you know, healthy as I can. So year two, I'll be able to play all 16 games plus the playoffs, bring some solidarity to the O-line. So I can, you know, we can be the best unit we can be to, you know, help Deshaun out, help the team out, be the best, you know, offense in the NFL.
I think the very best part of that was like he didn't change his facial expression or anything, but he said he got married, she's pregnant now. That's how I spent the offseason.
That was the exact order.
I can't imagine a better way to put it than him having, you know, legal relations with his new bride, and now she's pregnant, and that's how he spent his offseason.
I'm looking at the transcript, and I'm going to read it again. We just heard him say it, but I'm going to read it again. This is the sequencing of what Titus Howard says. I got married in the offseason back in February, so I spent a lot of time with my wife. She's pregnant now, and we're having a baby now in October, so that's how I spent my offseason. Seth and I both texted each other during that press conference, literally at the exact same time, literally saying Titus Howard spent the offseason impregnating his wife.
It's a full-grown man right there. He's done grown up, man.
I wanted him to – it would be great if after that quote in the press conference, he stood up and he did like the ravishing Rick Rude hip swivel and sat back down and then continued answering questions.
It's what I tell young radio hosts all the time, because the other thing you discover is that once you're married, you can make all the jokes and innuendo about sex all you want.
That's right.
And people actually pat you on the back for it. Right. Like, you know, I'll make a joke about marital sex, and all the pastors I know will be like, ah, Seth, that was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But meanwhile, you know, I come in here as a young single guy, and it would be a whole different story. I'd be met with disapproval. You got to get married. Listen, young radio guys listening right now, I know we have people that listen in from all, like, young communications majors.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, you got to get married. It's the right thing to do for your career.
Yes, and for your comedic chops. It's the right thing to do to get sex jokes into your repertoire. Get married.
If you want to appeal to a mass audience, you got to be able to talk about sex without offending them every now and
then. That's right.
Getting married is the way to go.
One more from Titus Howard on where he can improve. Where he can improve on football things, not on his relations with his wife.
I feel like I did pretty good in the run game. And this year, too, I'm trying to take a step, you know, and get better in the pass protection. So, you know, so we can, you know, be – Deshaun had more time back in the backfield, and, you know, I feel like if I can get better, you know, win the one-on-one blocks that I need to win, you know, it's going to only just help the team. And that's my goal for this year, to improve in pass protection so we can be better on offense.
Seth, I'll point it out so that you don't have to, so that it doesn't sound like bragging. You were the one person who stood up and clapped at the draft party the night that Titus Howard was drafted.
Yeah, yeah.
In a sea of boos, you were the dissenting voice to say, bravo, Texans, you drafted Titus Howard.
They'd asked him later about winning the Rookie of the Year award, and he, you know, or he was on the all-rookie team. And he gave a very professional answer, which was, hey, I'd rather be playing in the playoffs than being on the all-rookie team, because he was injured. But I was like, oh, boy, you could have totally taken a shot at Andre Dillard there. And
I
asked, you know, like, was Andre Dillard on that team? I don't know. I can't remember if he was or not. He actually might have been, but Andre Dillard struggled a lot more than Titus Howard. So, he's all upside. And I think that if you looked at last year's draft, or 2 years, Lonnie Johnson and Titus Howard were the two guys where you thought, all right, well, these guys are going to be projects. Let's see what we get out of them. I'm going to be nervous. I was going to be nervous last year if I had to see Titus Howard playing left tackle. Ultimately, he ended up being your starting right tackle, and he got better every single game.
Yeah.
I think both the rookie offensive linemen got better every single game. It was a shame to see Titus Howard get injured, because he was learning a lot of lessons. He was getting more consistently good. He's still having rookie moments. Now, rookie offensive linemen just get beat in a certain way. They get a little overly aggressive. They get a little out of balance. They do things to hurt themselves before they actually lose the snap. he was doing that, but he was ironing it out, and you could see the progress, which is really cool to see, and which I've always said 3-4 years ago, I said, look, if Mike Devlin, I'm hard on Mike Devlin, but part of it is that he doesn't have really good talent to work with. So far last year, when he had some really good talent to work with, I thought he did a good job of improving those young
guys.
I think Nick Martin made some progress too.
He is a big year for Devlin because this is the first year the offensive line has had big expectations in a long time. Probably since that Dwayne Brown, Chris Myers, you know, maybe even going back to when Wade was there, that group. Like, this is expected with all the changes everywhere else on offense and with the weird offseason where guys haven't had a chance to work out. There's going to be no preseason games. The continuity on the offensive line, Seth, is being touted as one of the key attributes to this team if they're going to succeed this year.
Well, and continuity really matters this year. I was listening to our friend Ross Tucker talk to Greg Cassell from NFL Films. And Greg Cassell, who's just one of the smartest guys out there, he thought that of all the position groups that would suffer this year by having an atypical offseason, that it would be the offensive line. Because cohesion matters so much on the offensive line. All five of those guys being able to know what the other guys are doing without even having to say it. It matters a lot. Now, look, the passing game, cohesion matters there too, but they can work on the passing game. It's a lot harder to work on the offensive line. You can't just get together and have full contact drills where you're reading and picking up blitzes and everything. It's a lot harder to do. So if I feel a whole lot better about this year's offensive line than I would have last year's offensive line where, you know, I mean, Laremy Tunsil hadn't even been with the team. You had two rookies starting. Last year's offensive line going through this offseason, it would have been an abject disaster versus the Chiefs in week one.
Yeah.
This year, it's going to be different.
Yeah, it'll be different. Seth, Matt Khalil was still in our lives at this point last year, if I'm not mistaken. And he definitely was, because I remember being out of practice in weeks 3 and 4 of the preseason, and we were still doing Where's Khalil? We were playing that little game.
I try not to make too much of training camp practices, but I'd go out in training camp practices and watch Matt Khalil before he got hurt and think, oh, Lordy.
Yeah.
This guy can't be your starting left tackle. What the hell is going on here? Was this guy given any money at all?
I called up my insurance agent, and my insurance agent is, Sean, why exactly are you taking out life insurance on Deshaun Watson? You're not related to him. Trust me, I've been to camp and I've watched Matt Khalil try to move. It's a little sketchy, but trust me, it's going to be rough for Deshaun this year.
I saw Matt Khalil get bull rushed by veterans who weren't even actually trying to bull rush him. I swear to God, it was like Whitney Merciless is, you're in no pads and Whitney's just trying to, you know, work on his hand placement and stab Khalil's chest.
Well,
and boom, he's getting launched off like a bottle rocket.
The flip side to that is, you know, you got, you know, the dopes like me there that were probably like, God, Whitney looks good.
Yeah.
Wait, that's right. He's dominating Matt Khalil, who has no legs. Bradley Roby was the third Texan to meet with the media yesterday. This is Bradley Roby. The most seasoned guy in the cornerback room right now is no longer Jonathan Joseph. He's a Tennessee Titan. It's Bradley Roby. What's it like to be the OG in that room?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I'm just definitely the oldest guy and more experienced, most experienced. And I definitely feel like it's my job to lead the guys and lead us to be better than we've been in the past. You know, my goal is to be a whole lot better than we've been over the past couple of years. So that's my plan. And, you know, I'm doing everything I can to, you know, help everyone, including the safeties as well, you know, trying to get on the same page with Jay Reed, working out with him a lot this offseason, you know, just kind of getting that bond together. Because one thing I know about secondary is you have to be a tight-knit group, you know, on and off the field. So I think I'm trying to build that as much as possible.
You know, you had mentioned earlier that Roby had only missed one game before he got to Houston. It was because of a suspension.
Right.
It was a suspension where he hadn't been playing well for a couple of weeks, and he was MIA. On a Monday after it was a weird situation in Denver. And when I've talked to people in Denver about it, it's one of those things where like, I don't know what the hell happened. Roby, I think Roby is the classic guy who had a lot of talent, but needed a change of scenery. And I think sometimes with those guys, they take a huge leap forward in maturity when all of a sudden you're depending on them to be mature, you know, and it is a different environment than when you were a rookie. because I didn't see any hint of that last year in terms of him not being consistent or steady or solid mentally. Now, physically, he had his hamstring issues. So I think he strikes me, just every time I've heard him talk, he strikes me as a guy who can grow into a leadership role pretty well just by virtue of that being expected of him.
I think it's, to me, Seth, one of the more fascinating sort of low-key storylines in camp is just that, is the leadership in the secondary room. This is going to be the first training camp with no Jonathan Joseph out there since 2010. And it's not going to feel DeAndre Hopkins isn't there level weird. Like, that's going to feel weird not having Hopkins there, because he's a great, legitimately great player. And he got traded as a legitimately great player. Jonathan Joseph is several years removed from being peak J-Jo, but he's been the leader in that room. He's been a fixture at training camp. And that, combined with Roby now being the guy to be thrust into that role, is really interesting to me, because I'll be honest with you, I'm surprised Bradley Roby is back as a long-term by NFL standards, a three-year deal, Houston Texan. I thought Roby would be the classic one-year mercenary contract, and I wouldn't begrudge him for leaving and going somewhere. My guess is he might have been able to get more money than he got from the Texans in the open market, but I think he likes it here. I think he's getting like $10.5 million a year. I think it's we take a lot of shots at O'Brien's offseason, and I think a lot of them rightfully so. The Bradley Roby contract does not get mentioned enough. That is a really good deal for the Texans, provided he stays healthy.
Yeah, and it's just, in today's NFL, you got to be able to play man. And at times over these last few years, the Texans haven't been good enough at playing man. So you need guys like that. They don't grow on trees. That's why you saw O'Brien just basically taking any former first-round defensive back that was available and saying, like, all right, let's bring him in and see what his deal is, because at least athletically we know he can play man defense.
We should mention Gerrion Conley activated, too, within the last day or two. So he's healthy. He was on the pup list. He's healthy again. So that's good. Your two starting corners, both guys probably very disappointed that there's not going to be college football at their alma mater this year, two Ohio State guys. All right, back to the Astros. They lose in heartbreaking fashion again last night. Also, we found out they will be without a hitting coach, well, at least the one that was hired to do that job, for a long, long time. Was the Alex Cintron suspension justified? Justifiable? We'll get to that next.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.